Cal, good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks, James. And yourself?
Oh, yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Sitting here in this beautiful Melbourne day. So
Yeah,
fantastic. Thanks for spending some time with today. Cal, now we all know you as the former player, an NBL coach, an NBL player, Hall of Famer. You people know you because of your smile, your energy, your laughter, and your optimism. But probably what the thing that most people don't know about you is your upbringing and about the things you've experienced. So without trying to downplay them by listing them, but let me just give a quick snapshot for people to get a context. So your dad was murdered at work and when you were a 7-year-old, and you then had to become the man of the house as a 7-year-old. And the impact that had on your mum and your family was enormous, to the point when your mum was hospitalized, taken away from you when you were a 12 or 13-year-old. Your sisters were also taken away, and you basically lived by yourself, looking after the house and everything at the time with some support. You've experienced things like a group of white kids trying to set you on fire, and we're talking about the 60s. Your sister, who's albino, getting in fights because people thought you were holding the hand of a white girl. You've played games of basketball in Australia where people have dressed up as members of the Klan. And so, Kel, you've seen racism from the 60s and the civil rights movement all throughout the last period of time to the current scenario around Black Lives Matter and the things we're seeing here in Australia. And so this is the question I have for you, Kel. So as a 65-year-old black man living in Australia, what is it about what you've experienced that you don't want the current generation to experience?
That's a great question, James. I have to just look at my kids and think about all the young kids that I coach around the country and being involved with in their education and opportunity for employment. And I don't want them to go through the pain. I think when you are subjected to racism and discrimination, it eats at you all the time. And you don't feel that you have an opportunity to express yourself because you're constantly being put in a corner, it's almost like, I suppose, being locked up in a prison. You probably feel better off because when you're free, but you're actually not, to go after your own choices and your own goals, it kind of really hurts. So I wouldn't want any young kid to go through that. It's just the challenges are sometimes insurmountable for some. As you know, we have a crazy account for suicides in this country for young kids, young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids in particular. And it's because they don't feel that they got a voice, they don't feel that they can express it, and they don't have those models, role models to actually aspire to right in front of them. And I guess that's where I was a little bit fortunate with mentors. If I didn't have them, then I know I probably would have been similar to quite a few of my friends who overdosed on drugs or locked up in prisons or just got killed doing crazy things. So, I don't want, and I cannot accept seeing that for the next generation. Of course, I use the sport as a vehicle to try to better myself, and I found it in the sport. Being subjected to, no, you're too short, or it's an all white team, so we don't want any black guys in our team, to the point where it's flipped. I'm in all white team and I'm the only black guy. And then it comes, I'm the all black guys and we got one white guy and I'm kind of feeling for him. But I feel that when you come up in that sort of environment, you're challenged all the time and you have to find a way to try to let that out and try to achieve the goals that you set for yourself. So that's the difficulty that I don't want to see any other young kids go through. You're always going to be challenged. That's just part of life. But you don't want the race card or the discrimination card to be in your face. And that's the way I always try to show that I can be the example by trying to overcome that.
So, Cal, when you look at your experience and you see that at one level, when you're on the court or around the court, that racism or things like that can occur. You're being judged a bit differently because you're being judged on your performance, on what you're doing. But when you're outside of that, your non-sport or your non-performance time, is that sense of being judged all the time, or someone, as you said, putting you in a box, that just wears you down?
It definitely does. I mean, you feel like you on show all the time, because being a Black America, and particularly here in Australia, you're a minority, and therefore you've expected to respond in a certain way. Being recognized as one of the better players in the country, as soon as you walked into the gym, you know, you expected to look after everyone around you. You know, the autograph seekers, or if you don't, then you immediately call the name, or smart, you think you're too good or whatever. So you try to accommodate. When you step on the court, you're expected to perform to a expectation that probably is a little bit crazy, to feel that you can actually aspire to be at the top like that all the time. But you know that if you don't aspire to be at your best and don't perform at your best, there's a good chance that you might get a ticket going home.
Yeah.
And when you have a family that you're responsible for with you, that means you don't even want to go there. You think only the positive thoughts that can help you achieve the goals that you have. So in trying to say that you're different is just a small part of it. You know, I always use the term, I'm short, I'm Black, and I'm bald. That means I didn't have a whole lot going for me. So anything from that point is going to give me the strength to say, well, you know what? I'm going to have to overcome the Blackness. I'm going to have to overcome the shortness, which I could do that with my quickness and speed.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the only way I can overcome my baldness is cut off all my hair. And that's what I decided to do, rather than have that landing path in the top.
Cal, so one of the things about being a professional athlete, I suppose, is that the sense of others controlling your destiny. So you play well, someone buys you out, someone takes you here, someone takes you there, and that sense of being in that. So as an African American man, and the history of things there, that can't have been easy at times. There would have had to have been times, I'm sure, when you felt like a commodity as opposed to you were a member of a team.
No question about it. I at one point, I had gone to my teammate who was a white American, and he was the only other import on the team. And I said, I feel like a slave. You know, I'm being sold, you're coming with me, but I'm the one that's expected to perform, because everywhere you go, it's all about, come watch the Black Pearl, come watch the Black Magic, come watch the brilliant Negro God. You know, so as soon as I walk into the gym, and no matter, I'm the last one to get there, because we have to get accommodated. We got to get someone to pick us up. We got to get them taken to a place. You don't know where you're going. And the game is being held up, waiting for you to come into the gym. And being that the teams are warmed up, you come in, they're expecting you to perform. Then you're packing your bags, you're going to the next spot. And someone's getting paid for this, and it's not you.
And you
feel that you're just being at the beck and call of someone else just selling you off. So that bothered me to no end, but I was in a strange country.
Yeah,
I didn't know anyone.
Yeah,
I'm trying to obviously leave my legacy.
Yeah.
If this is going to be the one and only time I'll be here.
Yeah.
And so I tried to perform to the best of my ability, but it was hard, because you're always thinking that if you get hurt, no one's going to care anything about you. So you're not only trying to perform, you're also trying to protect yourself.
Cal, you've mentioned before the idea about, and I'm not quite sure if the language is right, but you talk about being in the fourth quarter. I suspect you're looking younger than that, but you talk about being in the fourth quarter. And so, and racism and the things you've experienced over time have been throughout your whole life. And so you've experienced, you know, quite conscious overt racism. You've experienced quite somewhere it's unconscious, but it's sort of, there's that bias that exists in there. And so why now? You would have seen these things your whole life. And no doubt there are times when you've said things, and there are other times when you've laughed them off, I would assume. There'll be other times where you've accepted it as, or there's other times where you said, I'm just going to beat you on the court, or I'm going to beat you in some other way. What is it about now? Is it the fourth quarter? Is it what's happening? What is it about now that makes you really keen to talk more about the impact it's had on you?
I think it's a bit of both. And it's a bit of the fourth quarter, being 65 years old. I've outlived both my mom and my dad by a number of years. My dad, 25 to be exact. And my mom, she passed from 55. So I feel that now with Black Lives Matter and what happened in the US, unfortunately, it gave me some sort of spark to say, you know what? I've been here the longest out of all the Americans, all the Black Americans I've seen. I was the only one here along with one other, and he's the quiet guy, you know, but he's always on me for advice. And I just feel that if I got to represent, well, this is the time. Having six kids and seven grandkids, you know, I feel that I got to pave the way. And being the fourth quarter, I feel that it's time for me to say, you know what, enough is enough. If I have to represent my family to try to create a better pathway for them, then I need to step up to the forefront and be that guy. Yeah. So I've seen what's happening in the States. I've seen racism, as you said, all throughout my life in the US. But what bothers me the most is when I see it here, and it's pretty overt in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander space, but with other people of color, Sudanese, Black Americans, Africans, I see it a little bit differently. I see it as a sneaky racism, as I see it as a lack of opportunities. And I see how they throw the blocks up and just say, do not pass go, do not collect your $200. An example of what I felt was probably the utmost moment was when I left a championship program that finished in second in the grand final my next year. So it could have been back-to-back champs. And then I found myself out of a job.
Cal, you talk about, I think I've heard you say before, the notion of, and you touched on it a bit with your family, that the notion it's not about you. So that we mentioned earlier a bit about how your experience is what you don't want others to feel. But tell me a bit about what she meant by when she said it's not about you.
My mom was beautiful. She's, you know, she was a widow for, you know, 49 years. And she raised me, although she struggled with her own demons, with alcohol and all. But she always put on me that I was a little man and that I had to represent my sisters and her. And so I went with that mission. I was able to bring my mom to see me play in college, and I was able to bring her to Australia three times. And the fourth time she was coming to live for an extended period of time. She left me a Bible with all my messages in there. And she always used to tell me, but the message really hit home when, after she passed, I'm opening up the Bible and seeing where her coins are crossed and all that. And the message was there written for me that it's not about you, it's about CJ. Mm. And CJ being my first biological born son, I have a stepson that I took on from the time he was 18 months old. I took that as, okay, I'm gonna pave the way, but it's not gonna be about me. And so I felt like I had to be a shield, take all the hits, you know, having to teach him that, you know, you don't have to come down my path, you can go a different way, but I'm gonna try to open the door as wide as I can. And that's by not giving up. And I felt that I had to pack my pride suitcase wherever I went. And that's my acronym for, I knew it was gonna be tough, I had to persevere, I have respect for my mom, for myself, and my family I'm representing. I definitely knew that I had to make intelligent decisions, because one bad move can throw you in a prison cell, lock you up, you know, or ship you out. I've seen other guys where that's happened to them.
Yep.
So then you're on guard, you treading on, because you don't want to make that mistake. Being Black, you're the first one that's going to get called out.
Yep.
And then it was about the D's and the pride, which I took a whole lot of pride in. I was always going to be dedicated. Whether it was when I didn't have a job, I had to jump on a postie bike. And everyone's looking at me and having a good little laugh. But I was teaching my son, because I said, it's not about me, it's about you. You don't have to go this way, but I'm going to be on the postie bike to show that I have a job. And I'm ready to support my family no matter what.
Yep.
And I'll work my way up in the postal system. Yeah, to the point where I can get in the management. It was all about the determination that I'm not going to let the people that felt that they put me in that box can put the lid on it.
Yeah.
And then it was about the discipline, about every day I had to go about my business. So I wanted to stay fit. At a 40-year-old, I'm running in the morning. I'm out running my son to let him know that it's not about me. You know, it wasn't meant for me. It's meant for you. But I'm going to show you what you have to do to actually get to that mountaintop.
Yeah.
And then it was the desire and paying attention to the detail.
Yeah.
And once I got that pride and adding the E, nothing was going to happen without putting in the maximum effort.
Yeah. So
the effort was all about me.
Yeah.
And I wanted to show that each and every day. I felt like I wasn't going to let anybody outwork me.
Yeah.
And in doing that, I had to package my hurt in the way I go about with my smile. And I love going high five, stay alive, cut the, and just keep it smiling and run stunned, have some fun. Whatever motto I can come up with was what put the fuel in my tank to keep going. And then looking at my kids now, they all understand. And they're all their own people. And I can see them gaining confidence by saying, wow, Dad, you stepping up, you know, you're representing us.
So, Cal, if you think about the messages and that notion of that you're not about you, and you've had a lifetime of overcoming barriers and overcoming huge hurdles and the like, and you've learned a whole range of things, and that the idea that someone can keep you in the box is been what you've been sort of challenged and battling your whole life. What do you say to young people now? That what's your what? Where's that lesson for you? What is it, the message you want to give them, who they may well be being put in a box by a whole range of different people at the moment? What's the message that you give to them?
You have to believe in your dreams. You have to have a dream. And, you know, someone could try to throw water on your flame, but they don't have to be able to put out your fire. And I felt that my dream was to, at one point, was to be a national coach. I wanted to coach Australia. Lindsay Gage said, I love him to play for Australia. I think he has all the qualities. And I was right behind. Well, that opportunity just disappeared. So that doesn't mean that I can't aspire to be the best I can be in the coaching. Well, if you don't get the opportunity to coach on the highest level, well, maybe that's the plateau, but I can be the best coach coaching under 10s, under 12s, under 14s, you know, under 20s, right up to the second division, you name it. And I don't think people can stop you when you keep popping up like the cat in the box with the holes. They try to stop you here, you pop up over there. They try to stop you here, you pop up right in front. My goal was always to try to do more than I can so I can find out how much I can actually do.
Yeah.
And that meant that I was constantly setting goals and resetting. And I haven't reached the goal of being a national coach, but as my mom said, it wasn't meant for me. CJ is now the assistant national coach for Australia.
Yeah.
He's actually done everything I've tried to achieve and thought I was all that. he smashed it and he don't even look at me as far as like, you know, he don't want to rub it in, but he will let me know if I ask him.
But you keep telling you've paved the way, Kel. That's the difference.
That's it. Yeah. But that's my belief, James. You have to believe in the dreams inside of you. And yeah. you got to have that be your awakening to yeah. constantly go out every day and try to achieve something for the next gen.
Yeah. So you've lived in Australia for 41 years. How do you describe yourself? Do you describe yourself as an Australian-American, American-Australian? How do you talk about yourself?
No, that's the toughest thing for me, James. Much as I had to renounce my U.S. citizenship, as soon as I open my mouth, the first thing people say, are you American? So I can't hide the fact, but I am also shattered that when I went back to the U.S. Council, when they opened up that you can have dual citizenship, I went back to ask if I can reclaim my U.S. citizenship because I have young kids that would love the opportunity to go to the U.S.,
yep.
go to college, work. And the U.S. told me no. They sent me through the exact papers that I applied for. They said I renounced my U.S. so I can actually play for Australia. So they said, and live here and work here. And so they said, well, this is what you said.
Yeah.
So you stick to it. And I didn't. They told me I can actually appeal.
Yeah.
You know what? I said no. But then on the flip side, as an Australian, a naturalized Australian says, I don't feel I have the same rights. I've never been offered any opportunities on the national program and the coaching, and I've been a successful one. As an Australian, no one sort of says you really a fair dinky die Australian. So I don't get that privilege. And that bothers me to an extent because I feel that no matter what the case may be, you can see me as an American that's naturalized and been here for 42 years.
Yeah.
But yet still, you're not opening the door for me because you feel that you don't have to.
Yeah.
If I was born Australian, then there could be some opportunities. Now, that also comes with the Indigenous space / them looking at me a little differently. You know, the Africans. So you feel like you're in really no man's land.
Yeah.
You know?
And that sense of belonging is so important to you, isn't it? It's a sense of belonging where you feel like that you belong. Where is my people? Where are the people who see me? And is that so? But no bit of paper can tell you that, really, can it?
No, the piece of paper, that naturalized Australian certificate, I got it tucked away somewhere, which I would never pull out to actually. I just know I got a passport.
Yeah.
You know, and I got a Australian driver's license, you know. But when I go back to the US, I get searched down like tomorrow.
Yeah. But I'm taking a crack when you go to New York, though. They think they can know you're a local.
Well, my New Yorkers, and that's the beauty about getting home. And I mentioned, I think to you personally, I got a white mentor who's was my junior high school teacher when my mom first bought our home in Queens. And he sent me a message today to say, I always say you're the best. And he's 89, Mr. Marvin Miller. And he still to this day recognizes me as his son.
Yeah.
And not having a dad, you took that on board. That's why I never see color as such. You know, I treat people the way I want to be treated, but I always loved the way Mr. Miller treated me. Like didn't matter what color I was his son. Yeah. And he always respected that. But here, even with the Black Americans, because you're a naturalized Australian and they're American, they even look at you a little bit like, oh, you dropped the ball, champ. You know, like, but as soon as they can see the opportunities that might afford them, they got their hand up trying to become Australian.
Yeah. So Kel, the bit about when you see that sense of belonging, so that you look at people, young people today who don't feel like they belong in Australia, they don't feel like they're accepted by people. What's your message to them?
It was like the movie that we've seen.
In My Blood It Runs, In My Blood It Runs,
And Lil Juwan, you know, not feeling accepted. my message to him was to believe in yourself and keep going. And I, again, think that you have to become more into yourself in terms of what you want to achieve. And I suppose my grandson summed it up best for me when he was sort of 7 years old. He said, "Pop, come in the room." I wrote an acronym on my mirror, and it's our name, Bruton. And I thought, wow, that's pretty clever. And he said, "Yeah, I thought you would really like it because you're always big on the acronyms." And my dad has told me that. And I looked at it, and it just brought tears to my eyes. Very similar to the Juwan story. And I said, okay, the B, it's as simple as it can be. Be kind to others, because that'll come back to you. Respect, which is, you know, that's always a key word in my vocabulary. And my kids, I preach it to them all the time. The you, and I think it carries you a long way, which a lot of young kids don't use enough. Use your manners. You know, people appreciate you if you can front up and say all the right things about, excuse me, pardon, yes, thank you, and be grateful. So using your manners can buy you a lot of leeway. Whatever faith you believe in, you trust in a higher being and trust in God. And my mom, with her Bible, and I still have the Bible opened up right here in my next room. I think the O, because it's going to happen to everybody and you're going to have to learn from them, you have to own your mistakes. And I've made a number of them, you know. But I always feel that if I own them, I can grow from them. And that's where I feel I can look people in the eyes and they can see the windows of my soul. And that's the way I try to present myself all the time. And the end was my favorite when my godson said, well, Daddy, he said, "Pop, you're something else, because you never give up. Even when he's beating you in the one-on-one, let's play again. So my ultimate words to the young kid would be, the game is not over until you win.
Yeah.
And that's the way I approach it. The game is not over until I win. That means that's my fourth quarter philosophy. Because I want to take it into overtime. But we never know what time we have on this earth. I'm always trying to win the game. And you might beat me once and you beat me twice and you think you closed the door, but I'm never giving up. Because the game is not over until I win.
And Cal, that's a wonderful way to wrap up what we're talking about today. I think that one of the lessons, and I always gain an enormous amount of just listening to you talk and having a conversation, but for the things you've overcome and for the contribution you've made, there's many people out there who claim to have an impact, but there's very few of them who are memorable and making an impact on individuals all over the country. And I've had the great pleasure to meet many of them over time who, strangely enough, have come across you far more than they've ever come across me. But I think one of the really important lessons is that there's a dream. You've been to the top, you've been at the bottom, you've faced enormous barriers and you've faced a lot over time, but to still be able to see and have those lessons. And I think at a time in your life when you're starting to look, it isn't ever over. I don't think it's the third quarter. I think it's midway. I think it's the fourth quarter, certainly early in the third, I suspect. But that goal setting, that approach to being optimistic, that the capacity to be, the bravery, the courage to call out things that are unfair, to pave the way for the current generation and the next generation in your family is remarkable. And I don't think I'm any more Australian than you are, but I think it's a great pride in being a part of the team. And fantastic. Thank you very much for sharing your story with us today. And we look forward to hearing some more about it in the future. Thanks very much,
Cal. Thank you, James. Really appreciate it. Thank you for being a part. Let me be a part of your team.
Good man.